Hariam, in this interview, Swami Deva Maya shares with us the yoga psychology behind addiction and how the chakras can be viewed as steps to bring balance to the body, mind, spirit. Deva Maya has been a student of yoga for 45 years, trained originally in Hatha Yoga, 6 years of Iyengar, and 34 years in Satchananda Yoga. She's taught yoga since 1983 in city, suburban and small country classes and had her own school in Melbourne for many years. Currently, she coordinates 2 units of the Satchananda Teacher Training Diploma of Yogic Studies at Mangrove Mountain in New South Wales, Australia. And Deva Maya conducts workshops and classes around Australia and New Zealand throughout the year. Satchananda Yoga has provided Deva Maya with the most enduring personal benefits and ongoing interest because she found the practices, psychology and philosophies have been profoundly uplifting and life-changing. It is an integrating and holistic yoga reaching the heart, body and mind. Many students have been profoundly changed by Deva Maya's engaging and insightful teachings, which she has kindly agreed to share with us today. So, let's begin. Hariam, Swami Deva Maya, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
Can yoga offer significantly different personal development than other modalities and services for alcohol and drug addiction, such as AA and yoga?
I definitely think so. Well, AA and yoga both address the psychology of the person, and yoga definitely addresses that psychology. And AA has some well-proven steps and ideas about how to work with the human mind and a person with addiction. The thing that yoga offers is that it works with the physical body, so it has practices and techniques. Actually tried and true, one technique will create this experience, another technique, another experience. So, but the practices of yoga will help to correct, harmonize and balance the systems of the body. So perhaps strengthen the nervous system, endocrine, lymph and immune systems, and help correct the chemical balance that goes awry with psychological problems. Mm. So every psychological response we have causes a chemical response in our body.
Yeah.
And we can really think of ourselves as a walking chemical factory.
I think it's, you touched on many points there that are really important, because it's, my experience with AA is, whilst it, they say they're encompassing, you know, the mind, body and spirit, the body isn't as touched as perhaps yoga, which is all that.
Yes. I think yoga sees it as body-mind. Mm. Often we talk about body and mind, but truly for yoga it's body-mind.
Yeah.
It could almost just always say the two words together, body-mind. And it's said that the body is actually a very gross form or coarse form of the mind.
Wow.
Whatever's taking place in the mind is going to show up in the body.
Yeah.
Including the cravings and urging for things.
Yeah.
Addiction.
Mm. So what is the most significant service that yoga provides?
I think what it provides is mindfulness and self-love.
Yeah.
And it does this in the actual practices, so that when you do what I suppose the world calls them exercises, but in yoga we call it asana. When you do an asana, you're carefully and mindfully positioning the body so that it's eliciting certain feelings within you. You have to, if you're stretching your arms out wide, you're feeling yourself to be strong. And while you're stretching your arms out wide, you're stretching both the left and the right arms equally strongly.
Mm.
And you become mindful of how you are or you aren't doing that. And then you start to watch the other feelings as it translates down through your body by doing one thing, how that leads to another. And so when you start with the body, you can start to become mindful, not at an AMP level, not like a doctor,
yeah.
but just like a self-carer. You notice, yes, I can hold my shoulders wider, I can hold my head more correctly, I can be more graceful, I can feel that beauty in my body. And when you can feel the beauty in your body, you're really feeling the beauty that's in you. It's your body-mind beauty. And this leads to love, to self-love. So then it's appropriate that the yoga teacher gives the students who are coming for this purpose, that they give them practices that actually elicit these finer feelings. And it's by personal experience at that physical level that you start to connect in and understand yourself at that psychological level. Not just, doesn't just have to be psychology leads to psychology.
What underpinning knowledge does a yoga teacher need to teach drug and alcohol students?
Well, the underpinning knowledge that they need to have is about chakras. And also probably about past lives. Because we can say that you can have five children in one family and they're all conditioned or brought up with the same sort of values, but the end result of that adult is that they have often have completely different values. So what we have to understand is that every human being is unique in their development, with or without the environment that they were brought up with. And the close analysis of any human being will show that they're coming more strongly from one chakra or another. So this is the yogic way, chakras are the yogic way of explaining unique individual psychology.
I love that.
Yeah, so it's not vague. We are taught and we come to understand that the very base chakra is about whether you are going to feel insecure or secure. It's not your parents or your friends who make you secure or insecure. They don't make you feel lost. It's in you. So one person can have a childhood that's utterly devastating and remains secure. And another person feels lost. The same person in that lifetime that might not have very great inspiration. They might be secure, but they might not be very inspired. Another person might be quite lost, but a lot of what they do is quite inspired. All these different configurations were like a Rubik's cube. You switch it around and that's that individual combination. So first of all, there's the chakras which hold the potential from very low to very high, transcendental. So from very mundane behavior to very transcendental behavior. And one person's base chakra might be very evolved, but their second chakra might only be half evolved. And so it goes like that. And then within each chakra there's an essence that governs that type of behavior, and it might even be the most significant thing to know. The most important underpinning knowledge might be that you need to know that earth essence governs the Mulata chakra, therefore it governs security. The water essence governs Swadhisthana, therefore it governs emotional behaviors. the fire essence governs Manipur, and therefore it causes all things to do with willpower, self-motivation, and all the opposites too, of course. And the air essence governs the heart chakra. And that's their capacity to be touched, to be reached, to be critical of yourself or others, for acceptance and kindness and the urge to make amends. The feeling that you can have communion with yourself, with other people, and with a higher power, that all comes from this chakra. And the essence that causes that is air. And then the Vishuddhi chakra, the essence there is ether, which is an essence of purity, and in itself it means it makes for transformation. So this is the chakra of inspiration, real inspiration, from mundane to transcendental. So you might be lost with Mulata, but you might be quite inspired at Vishuddhi. And may not be able to show for a while. Might need to get a little bit of the lostness security to replace that, and then the inspiration will just bloom. And then finally we have this chakra here, the psychology of it is wisdom, and the essence which governs this is all of those tattvas. It's earth, water, fire, air, and ether in the whole of that. And that wisdom helps you to, the more you can gain access to that wisdom, the more you will break conditioning.
Yeah, wow.
So this is like wisdom breaks conditioning. Lack of wisdom permits conditioning. But inspiration is a special kind of intelligence and wisdom. Real love is a special kind of intelligence and wisdom. Willpower and motivation and nobility and integrity, that's a special kind of intelligence and wisdom. It's all intelligence and wisdom. And Swadhisthan, its intelligence and wisdom, has to do with feeling joy. Feeling the emotion of joy means that you no longer feel empty. You no longer need to gratify in any way. You can have a little of this and a little of that, and it's all very filling. Because you're full of joy. And then the very base chakra, the wisdom in there is security. Knowing that you're in the right place at the right time, having exactly the right experiences, and you become undisturbable. Maybe disturbable for a moment or a year. But no, generally you are living in a space where you know that you and everybody else are in the right place at the right time, having the right experience no matter what it is. So that's that underpinning knowledge is essential for a teacher who teaches yoga to somebody suffering from addiction. It doesn't matter if it's drugs, alcohol, chocolate, clothing, status, food. It's all depowering. Any addiction's depowering. So a teacher has to know that they need to know the key essence of every chakra so they can sprinkle that through their classes. Not focus on one thing as one step, this we're doing this week. That's not life. We have to be integrating.
So is this the 6-step yoga?
It is. Yes, this is a 6-step yoga.
And why do you call it the 6 steps?
Because those 6 chakras that I've named, Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, Manipur, Anahata, Vishuddhi, and Agnya, these 6 chakras have the psychology of the human being in it. There's a higher chakra called Sahasra, and this does not hold the human psychology. And this chakra can't be stimulated either. This is the chakra that is as evolved as the other six are. And what each of us are trying to achieve in our human life is to evolve each of the six chakras to their maximum capacity, to their transcendental potential. And along the way, all we have to do is keep our mind on these six ingredients all the time. And it's not confusing for a student to be spoken to during the course of the class, that you can stand tall, feel your legs activated fully, and feel yourself becoming grounded and stable. You don't have to mention mulita. You just have to mention the psychology in a human and light way. So if you were doing a forward bend or a backward bend, you could say that you could say, become aware of yourself as flexible, fluid, like water. Just flowing, going with the flow. Let yourself become more flexible.
That's great. It really just makes it's in human terms. I think this is a big thing when teaching a class. Like, there's no point in naming the chakras when someone is still working out if they're what day of the week it is. And I think a lot of people in addictions, it's just mumbo jumbo.
Yes, and I think also for people in addictions, they tend to think that they're the only ones who have got it wrong. They're the only ones who are suffering. And I think that these kinds of frames of reference let them know that everybody's like this. Oh, okay, I'm just the same as everybody.
Yeah, that is so important.
We all need to become more secure.
Yeah.
We all need to get our emotions stabilized like a pool of water, like a lake. And yet we still need to feel, we need to know if something's wrong, we should feel it. That anger, that emotion. If we're sad, we should feel that, but we shouldn't be, the water shouldn't be going like this.
Yeah.
The water should be feeling like a full body. And that's that fullness that stops you from feeling empty. When you feel the water is full, and then you just feel joyful. You feel joyful that you've had toast for breakfast. Feel joyful that there's water in the tap for you.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, I really do. And it just fills me. I do.
Yeah.
Very much so. I think so often it's that emptiness, that void that in addictions people are trying to fill.
Yes.
And once you have that from within, nothing can sort of break that. It is coming from within, and that joyful.
Yes, and this relates to substance, to feeling yourself as substantial, and as opposed to insubstantial, wraith-like, empty, lost, needy. What are some other terms you could relate to it? Resentful, feeling stuck, stale. And particularly conditioned.
Yeah.
So those would be probably the six forces that would be in those six steps would be lost, empty, needy, stuck, resentful, and conditioned. And they each have their opposite. To be secure, joyful, self-maintained, not needy. To feel a kindliness towards yourself and others that makes you want to serve yourself and others well. And that leads to making amends, making things right in the world. A win-win. From resentful to win-win.
Yeah.
And then inspiration is the opposite of being stuck, and being wise and having that sense of solutions is the opposite of being conditioned.
So in terms of personal development, or even in terms of addiction, what do you think the key problem is, and which chakra does that relate to?
Okay, so probably we could say that all the chakras are involved, because there's to greater and lesser degrees, our whole personality works to become an integrated personality. But in yogic terms, Swadhisthana chakra is the big problem.
Yeah.
It's the problem chakra. However, you can't just address it. You just can't go, okay, I'm going to address everything that's Swadhisthana. But you have to know as a teacher that this is where it's the chakra, because of the emotions and the pull, that gets a tight grip on your psyche and makes it very difficult for you to make changes.
Yeah.
Very difficult. But equally, it's the same chakra that's really connected to the chakra of inspiration. So the base chakra, Mooladhara, connects with wisdom. And the Swadhisthana chakra connects with Vishuddhi, the chakra of change, communication and inspiration and purification. And these four things all meet together. They're all one thing. So when you are feeling, when addiction takes you over, it's because you feel lost, empty, needy, stuck, all of those things. And they add up to a sense of insubstantiality. You feel insubstantial. So basically, you don't really feel like you properly exist, not in a rightful place. You haven't got an established groove of who you are and how you're going to do it. You are not feeling that life is meaningful or has a definite purpose, or even that life has a value, not even about yourself. But because all of these things are active ingredients in yourself, then that is how you perceive life. So you also don't feel motivated to try to change anything. You feel purposeless. Life feels purposeless. You can't find a meaning or a rightful place for yourself, so life feels meaningless. And then what happens is that because we don't have that substance in the general way that we're living life, we then return to a substance that will help it. And that substance might be the best clothes. That substance might be chocolate or the best foods, not even just food, not even just comfort food, it might be the best foods. And it might be money, it might be status that gives you substance. So, you know, you have a person who might drive a really old car, but they don't feel funny or insecure or strange in themselves. Because in that particular sense of status, they have a substance. Yet they may have other areas where they feel completely empty. They don't know what job to do. They don't know what they're suited for. They don't know what their skills or talents are. And if you were to say to them, "And what are your strengths, or what are your skills, or what are your talents?" they would go, "I don't really have any," because they haven't. They're not valuing any of the ones that they do have.
Yeah,
it can be valuable. It can be a very profound value. For instance, that you have survived angry parents. They might not have deliberately set out to endanger you, but somehow along the way they could have. And say you have five children in a family, you might have one child who feels like an endangered species and is completely emptied of any value and meaning in life because they're so overwrought with the anger of their parents. whereas another child in the family will take meaning from it and ensure they are not going to have this and they are not going to do that. So it's all what they're not going to have, but it slowly builds up to what they will have. I will have it.
So I guess that's like comes back to trying to escape from reality by using something, whatever that is.
Yes. Yes, it's just, but there isn't a really strong sense of reality.
No.
And I know what you're saying, and I think that the general public would understand what you've said.
Yeah.
But I think that in terms of a yoga teacher having an appreciation for this, is that the reality is a very vague thing for that person. And they're kind of clawing their way to a sense of reality, which the drug gives them. Whichever the drug is, alcohol, myriad kind of drug, chocolate, clothing, all the things we just said. So yeah, they're trying to create a reality because they don't actually have one.
Yeah. Wow. So Swadhisthana Chakra, that relates to emotions?
Yes. Yes. It relates to unconscious emotions, things that you have, ways that your mind has taken in and interpreted circumstances, and you're not actually consciously aware of them, and not even vaguely subconsciously aware of them, but they've kind of slam dunked deep into the unconscious, and they're governing you from that place.
So is that like samskaras?
It is.
Yeah, the impressions, yeah.
Absolutely is samskaras, and it relates to the crocodile swimming in the water, the samskaras. So you feel like you're in a perfectly good mood, and you're perfectly happy, and you're fine. You go somewhere, somebody says one word, and it's like something has jumped out and bitten you, and you have huge emotional reaction to it. And from that, you then go and do something to save yourself. Something to calm yourself, something to restore yourself. So we can't see or know what these really deep down triggers are, but we can know that by systematically, but we can know about them.
Yeah.
And if we know about them, we're halfway there. And then with a good yoga teacher, we can know to be able to let know that these things will come up.
Yeah.
Acknowledge it, go, that I didn't really know, but now I have seen it, I'm not going to go, oh, that's scary. I'm going to say, oh my goodness, I get it. And let it drop, because it's the subconscious mind that does all the problem solving. Not by holding it in the front of your conscious mind are you going to do some yoga things day by day. Go to wise people, go to AA meetings if you need to. But understand that it's Swadhisthana that's got the tight grip. It's Swadhisthana that's got all the power of emotional stuff that really holds you back. And they say, even in terms of enlightenment or self-realization, it's Swadhisthana that's difficult to get past. But this is why, it's because it's got a grip. It's got a grip and it's slippery water. So you've got to be able to apprehend what comes up in Swadhisthana with courage. And not think, oh my goodness, that's terrible. But think, oh my goodness, that's good, I can see that.
Yeah.
And that's the yoga teacher's job. And the other thing about the whole emotional and so the essence of is water, is this relates to taste. When we get a taste for something, we get a taste for addiction. Because we get a taste for something we like, and we also get tastes for things we don't like. I dislike this, you can't make me do it, I'm not going to do it. And our mind blocks and we get stuck. And there's whole worlds of experience where are all based around our dislike. Sometime in the future, maybe 20 or 30 years from now, somehow that dislike gets broken down and you absolutely like the thing you disliked.
That happened with me with mushrooms.
Did it?
But as a child, I hated them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It
yeah.
happened to me with coriander.
Wow.
Hmm. I had one experience, which was a distasteful. And 10 years later, something was coming through my mind on my taste buds and in my mind, and I couldn't work out what it was, and even a vague smell. And somebody gave me some coriander not long after that, and I tasted it and I loved it. And then some weeks after that, I realized that was the very thing that I had an intense dislike for, revulsion actually.
Yeah.
Mm. So dislike and revulsion, they also cause addictions. And we get a taste for things, that taste becomes intense like or intense disliking, and we are a prisoner to it.
Mm.
That's what we have to undo, is the taste for something.
It's interesting how you describe the coriander, because it's not like you said, I'm gonna make myself like coriander.
No.
It just happened.
Yes, it did. Of its own accord.
Mm.
Mm. And this happens to us all the time. And we have black and white and definite ideas about something. And one day you wake up and you think, well, I've just had a little bit of an insight there which has altered it being black and white, but I don't exactly know what to think yet.
Mm.
It still doesn't come through necessarily. It can come through slowly and reveal itself, or it can come through in a profound awakening.
Mm.
So by practicing yoga and by doing it for all of your chakras, it will help the Swadhisthana chakra to loosen its grip, which may come through in small steps which seem unrelated to your yoga practice, or it can come through in a major awakening which takes you by surprise. You think, oh, it's worked. Something's worked. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so emotions, a taste for something, and addiction, they're all totally intertwined. They affect your nervous system, your endocrine system, your lymph and immune. When you're not immune, when your immune system's not strong, it's because you're not immune.
Mm.
You're susceptible. If you're susceptible, it's because you're insubstantial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not a crime, it's just a description for.
Mm. Gosh. So how can a teacher disseminate something as alternative as chakras into the class?
Yes, and this is the juicy bit. This is the fun. Instead of just taking students through practices and making it seem that practices are physical, we take the student through a practice that's making that practice seem like a psychological experience. And sprinkling, that's a really good word, because you can have, say, the word security.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some other words that you think of when you think of security?
Safety.
Safety.
I think of grounded.
Grounded.
Foundation.
Foundation.
Stable.
Stable. Trust.
Mm, yeah.
Okay? They're just a few little words. And these are words that you can sprinkle. So let's say, for instance, we had Ekka Padasana,
mm-hmm.
where you're standing on one leg's out straight, got your arms out straight, every torso is strong, everything's strong. So one week you might want to use the word grounded. Feel the legs as powerful. One is grounded on the floor and the other is strongly stabilizing out. And you're just sprinkling the word stabilizing and grounded, but you are inferring this at a psychological level, because you have said it with your underpinning knowledge. You haven't said it as in, I'll make the leg strong, stick the other leg out and make it powerful. You've said, feel yourself to be grounded in that left leg. Feel the right leg stabilizing you.
Oh.
Stabilizing who you are. The next week you can use that same practice to say, feel the fire in your belly. Feel your personal power. Another week, feel your motivation. It's like you use key psychological words to empower the psyche of a person, not to get them to do a perfect asana, but to get the mind to know who it really is. Yeah, I'm powerful. Yeah, I'm working towards stability.
Wow. That is just, it's so powerful.
And it's fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave and Maya, for sharing your vast knowledge and wisdom about yogic psychology with us today with such clarity and insight. Your experience shines through and you are an inspiration for all. I look forward to hearing you share on yogic practices later in the course. Dave and Maya can be contacted via her blogspot, which is listed below this video, and is available for further workshops and talks about this or any other yoga-related subjects. Hari Om Tat Sat.